But does it make sense that we're in the midst of the wrath of God right now?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
We're losing our idols. And as we're losing our idols, think of postmodernism. What is it? It's the distrust of everything. Distrust all the idols, distrust institutions, distrust the churches, whatever. So you have no idols to believe in, right?
Right.
And so at the same time, we're creating this super idol.
AI and the wrath of God, today on In the Shadow of the Cross. Welcome everybody to the new and improved season 4 of In the Shadow of the Cross. This is the beginning of our fourth season. This is really exciting for us because for one thing, I can say right away, this is the longest I've ever been a part of a podcast. Because I think before this, I think the longest was maybe 3 years. So this is really cool starting our fourth year and just all the things that have just even happened in our own lives and our own journeys over the last 4 years and the community we've grown with here with between each other and then our listeners. And I get a lot of good feedback from these podcasts. I go on a Zoom call on Sunday mornings every other week with a group of mostly a lot of them ex-pastors and stuff. And they talk about, man, I really enjoyed your podcast this week, you know, really got a lot out of it. But you guys know how it is when you were pastors and stuff. It's the sermon you preach that you go, it was okay. That would be the one where everybody's it's the episode where we're like, what are we talking about? I don't know. We'll talk about this. Okay. And then we get through. It's like, okay, that was good. You know, and that's the one they're going, oh my gosh, that was, you know.
So I would say first of all, I've said this to you guys, is that I really enjoy this time. This is not a time I don't look forward to, or it feels like work. It just isn't. It's just beautiful. The second is, you know, Lauren, we've known each other going back to Steve Crosby days. And I've never met Jim in the flesh.
Yeah.
And yet I have, because I was sharing with a friend of mine this morning at the coffee shop about how we started the podcast. And that night we got on the Zoom together And I said, you know, I have just so fallen in love with Jim, not just because of who he is today, but because our paths had to have crossed back in those days in the summertime when we would get together, you know, and it's just, there's that, and to know that, and then all, now I know Jim, because I know that ethos, you know.
Right.
And it was like, oh, this is so good.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been, for me, there's really not a whole lot of words that would describe what this last 4 years have been like. I have been challenged in every way possible, I think. And good. I mean, you know. I think, what is it, March, that we're actually going to get a chance to meet each other, Mike?
Yes, this coming March.
But I love how, you know, this podcast started. It really was divine, you know. That Jim had contacted me about, was thinking of doing a podcast, had contacted me because he knew I'd done them before and understood the technology and everything. And Michael was at my house while Jim started this conversation. And I happened to mention it to Michael. And Michael, because our conversations, he had heard me mention Jim Durkin, Jim's dad, before. And I remember the first time I just happened to drop Jim's name and he went, Jim Durkin? He said, I know who Jim Durkin is. And it was part of the whole, which blew me away.
I didn't know. I thought he was talking about your dad. I was confused.
But this was in North Carolina. And I was like, really? And he was living in Pennsylvania at the time.
This was in Texas in 2021.
Well, but I mean, when I first had mentioned Jim Durkin.
And
so he knew now Jim Jr., who's on our podcast, knew his connection. So anyway, long story short, it was that since Michael was there, Michael's like, well, why don't the three of us do one together? And because the two of them have never met, I was like, I'm not sure how this is going to gel. You know, I mean, it sounds cool, but I'm not sure how this is the chemistry is going to work. And
It has, obviously. I mean, we're here on our fourth year, and I've loved watching you guys' friendship develop. You
Oh,
know,
man.
it's like the dad who, you know, the two kids meet at the playground. And you go, oh, we got to set up a play date. You know.
Well, I think your greatest fear was that you knew that I was Pentecostal and that I was going to have to go to work on Michael to get him to see the deeper truth there.
Exactly. Very true. Yes. So it's been good.
Dust, it's gold, it's gold.
Exactly. So we so to, on our topic to begin our season four, I've connected with a really wonderful group of believers here in Milwaukee just starting a couple months ago, and it's been fantastic. Very out of the box thinking, intelligent, willing to discuss in things that you know in the circles I've been in the past would get you in trouble. You know, is hell real? You know, all things like that, is God retributive? You know, things of this nature, and them to bring very intelligent, well thought out responses to the table, and I sat in one of the gatherings and teared up because I never thought I would sit in a gathering of believers like that. In a church building, having these kind of discussions freely and openly, and not being rejected, and not being, in fact, one a young lady was leading this particular one, and it was a discussion on heaven and hell, and she brought some really good resources, and I was just she was throwing out these great pitches, and all I was doing was swinging at them, and afterwards, she while she's speaking, she points at me, she goes, "I gotta know what you're reading." She goes, "I want to see your library." And she goes, "I feel like you should be sitting here." And I was like, "Oh, no." But I was, and afterwards, a lot of people came over, you know, well, we'll have to touch base, Michael. But one of them actually taught theology at a college in Pennsylvania, and he had met you. And he said he didn't know you well, but you came and taught at his college at the university where he was teaching, and goes, "Yeah, he had that peace." He was trying to remember preaching peace, you know, and so it was an amazing connection, you know. So it was pretty cool. It was that 6 degrees of separation kind of thing, you know, kind of like you with Jim Durkin. And so anyway, but in this discussion time, last week, is that we were talking about, we're talking about atonement theories in relation to heaven and hell, those kind of things. And as this was going on, the topic of wrath came up. And the thing I found really interesting was how quite a few people in the room still wanted to hold on to like a little bit of that wrath, you know. I had mentioned, well, you know, what if the wrath isn't God's? What if it's ours? And it was interesting because it kind of my comment was almost like I said, "What if pink elephants are real?" And people just kind of went, "Yeah, okay," you know. They just went on, you know. Let's move on from that. And I thought, isn't that interesting? You know, that it wasn't that even moving outside of this kind of, you know, the things that we've addressed here that are kind of toxic, you know, inerrancy and infallibility, and into arenas of thinking outside the box of hell and penal substitutionary atonement and sacrificial thinking. But there's still a lot of times just that desire to hold on to wrath. And then I also noticed that what came up a lot in the conversation was also it was being plugged into, well, that's sometimes how God teaches us. You know, is because going to the Old Testament, looking at the prophets, you know, and the correction that he would bring, and things along those nature. So I wanted to open this up to you guys. I thought this would be a really interesting discussion, and just start out with, first of all, what are your initial thoughts on, have you guys encountered this, and where did you go with that?
I don't think you can have a conversation with someone about the love of God, about his mercy, about forgiveness, without them immediately throwing back in your face, and then not necessarily challenging sometimes an honest question. Well, what about, and you know, and it can be all the stories of that we read in the Old Testament. It can be Jesus overturning the money changers' tables. It can be the scripture, whom the Lord loves, he chastens, you know. And I appreciate when it comes up as a genuine question, when it comes up as a, Durkin, you're all wet. It's like, don't give me that love stuff, you know, Daisy in every, the barrel of every gun.
You old hippie.
You know, but when it's an honest question, there are a few things that I, as a matter of fact, I was talking to a group of people just Wednesday night, and I said, let me ask you a question. If you had a major corporation, multiple branches, so on and so forth, and one of the branch managers, without the CEO's permission or knowledge, rewrote his employee handbook. And in the employee handbook, he introduced all kinds of things that were not standard to the corporation. Is that CEO responsible if there's fallout as a result of it?
Yes.
And ultimately, yes, he is. And I said, if you can wrap your head around that, when God introduced himself to Moses at the burning bush, he introduced himself to the God above all gods. He said, I don't want you to have any other gods ahead of me. Now, let's take it to that illustration. I don't want you to put your branch manager ahead of me.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in, you know, Fargo, North Dakota, back in the 80s, they picked on Fargo all the time. It was on every ad. Fargo, North Dakota. you know, if I was in that branch office and I was under that branch manager that rewrote the employee handbook, I would make the assumption that that came down from corporate.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. There were multiple gods. Moses, 40 years in Egypt. He knew all the gods of Egypt.
Right.
40 years in Midian. He knew all those gods. Okay. He knew what they required. So obviously, if they're a god and they require certain things, then the God of all gods must have approved it. It must have come down from corporate.
Right.
You're catching my drift there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so, of course, I'm going to assume that if I have a thought, I mean, you know, we joke about this a lot, but having been raised Pentecostal and charismatic, I'll tell you, the insane things I've heard from people that God told them. And it's like, yeah. Now, here is our people that don't have a canon. They have oral traditions and so on and so forth. they have a thought in their head that sounds spiritual, and it's like, well, God spoke to me and God told me this. God said that when we get into the promised land, that we're supposed to wipe out every man, woman, and child, unless it's a young virgin and she's kind of pretty. Then we can go ahead and rape her, have our way with her, and then we have to kill her. Well, that doesn't even sound like God. But I can imagine in a world where nations are trying to establish themselves, and the only way they can is or do is through war, annihilating their enemy, and all the other gods, the branch managers, they're all saying, this is what I require. So obviously, right. The God of all gods must require that.
Yeah,
and that's Jesus brilliant. Comes that's and Jesus comes and he says, yeah. I want you to know who the Father really is.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, are you kidding me? You peacenik. We know who God is.
We know the CEO.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I've read all about him.
Yeah.
And then I'll take it one step further and then I'll throw it back to Michael. I've read all about this CEO and I don't want him to be my father.
Yeah.
Thus, modern atheism.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
That was so good, Michael. Jim. I'm gonna steal that one from you, just so you know. I like that illustration so much.
The British manager was really good. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start. I've got a couple of post-it notes here full of notes, so that means a half hour of talking. But no, I want to start with Jim's bringing up Moses and what Sandy Goodhart, the Jewish Girardian scholar, calls the law of anti-idolatry. And one of Sandy's arguments, and he's a reader of Talmud and Mishnah, you know, and Jewish tradition. He's very, very well read, exceptionally well read. And he has a book called Sacrificing Commentary. And the argument in that book that gets sustained in his later work is that the entire Jewish tradition is grounded in the law of anti-idolatry. You shall have no other gods before me. None. And so I just wanted to really affirm that, Jim, because I even used that in my doctoral dissertation when I was citing, you know, methodologies that were important to my hypothesis. And I used Sandy's concept of the law of anti-idolatry. And I think it's very, very, very important. When Jesus says, Papa, Abba, make your name holy. Hallowed be thy name. Make your name holy. Jesus is saying, show the distinctiveness of your name, how distinct you really are. That's what holiness is total distinction. You know, so I just really wanted to affirm that, Jim, and I love the branch manager. That was great. What a way to start off season four. Brilliant.
Yeah, because and especially for me as a manager, it was so hitting home because I can't tell you how many times a day I'm having to go something an employee's wondering about, like using a vacation certain way or something. I'm having to go grab the employee handbook. Okay, what's the rule about it? You know, and so for you talking about someone grabbing that rule book and changing it up, I mean, that's such an accurate illustration of what people have done with putting a God ahead of Jesus and the Father of well, let's just rework this to make it fit with how we want this to play out. So, yeah, really good.
So I'm going to keep these initial remarks very brief, that we can expand on any of them. The first is the notion of wrath of God. Is it used in the New Testament? Yes. It's a phrase that tends to get associated with the time of the messianic woes In Christianity, known as the tribulation, in Judaism, as the time of the messianic woes. And it refers to the collapse of society. Oh, let me just try and I'm going to make a remark in a minute about this, but what we are experiencing now as a global culture is the wrath of God. Now, what do I mean by this? So, Greek has a number of words that it uses for anger. Okay? The primary one is thumos. Now, in Judaism, one of the things you find, there's a number of Hebrew words too. But what you find is a distinction that really becomes very important in this sense. God's anger in some texts is thumos in the Jewish scriptures. And God's anger in some texts is orge. Now, orge, we get the word orgy from. What's an orgy? Where everybody's banging everybody. It's that is there's you have lost all distinction about everything. It's chaos. It's chaos. Okay? So when I think of orge, the orge to theou, I'm primarily thinking historically, not morally. In other words, it is perhaps true that one can say that in certain Judaisms in Jesus' day, the wrath of God was a moral quality, and it was directed at sinners. But the New Testament writers don't shun from the phrase the wrath of God. They're not afraid of it. And at the same time, they're not afraid to say God is love. Because they've learned to do something that we haven't. When we come to the Bible, we think our calling is to rightly harmonize the word of truth. And it's not. Our task and calling is to rightly divide that word. And what Jesus brings to the table that I mean, if the early church didn't get it, you have to understand this. They caught glimpses of it. They saw how the death and resurrection of Jesus affected some parts of this theological model they had, but they weren't seeing the whole thing. It didn't go, oh, they didn't go, oh, hey, we're Christians now, we get it, right? No. It's a struggle and a process, and we see this between Paul and the Jerusalem church, the Johannine community and the Petrine community. I mean, it's a real struggles. And so one of the things is you can find the phrase the wrath of God. I've got my Moulton and Gedon Greek concordance open here. You can find it used by John the Baptist. Oh, no surprise. The Gospel of Matthew, John the Baptist, John talks about the coming wrath. You find the same thing in Mark. You find wrath used a couple of times in Luke, once in John, interestingly, after for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, but whoever doesn't believe this, the wrath of God abides upon them. Whoa, you're going to hell. No, not quite what it means yet. So, Paul in Romans uses it, oh God, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 times. 11 times this phrase is used in Romans. This is the epistle about the rectification of God is revealed from by grace through faith, but here's this wrath of God stuff, and you find it in Ephesians, Colossians, 1st, 2nd Thessalonians, Hebrews, James, and the book of Revelation. So the New Testament writers don't shy from this. Why? Because when they took this phrase, the coming wrath or the wrath, that's a way of saying God is no longer working on the hearts of humanity. They keep making this choice against the law of anti-idolatry. They keep putting other gods before themselves. Well, Their gods need to come tumbling down. And how are their gods going to come tumbling down? If I let go of history and social relations and let them go all mimetic into undifferentiation, that's the experience of orgē.
Okay.
See? So it's a historical phenomenon. And it's and when we go through the really hard times and we're praying and praying and praying and praying and praying and ain't nothing happening, that's when we lose our faith. But it's a good thing because we're losing trust in idols.
Wow.
You see?
Yeah, right.
So the orgē theou is even a way, a move toward redemption. So I don't
Yeah.
have a problem with that because, you know, somebody could say to me, well, what about this verse? You know, and I'll say, well, what about it? And they'll go, well, how does it square with what you're saying in this verse? And then this is when I reply. We're not called to rightly harmonize the word of truth. We're called to rightly divide it. So let's divide it. Let's see what's
Yeah.
happening here. What's really going on? These both can't be true. We both know it. It doesn't make sense. This is a sick alcoholic parent in the sky we're constructing.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they love you, sometimes they hate you. You never really know. You just hope when you pray they ain't been drinking.
Right.
You know? So that's my 2 cents worth.
So the wrath of God, basically because it's being divided, that's in a sense, how would I phrase it? That's basically like that's the wrath from your idol in a sense.
Yes. The New Testament does not ever use the phrase thumos tu theou, the anger of God. You know,
Oh, right.
that
Okay.
emotional response, like, I'm going to get you, you know.
Right.
It just doesn't use that. It's orgē.
So yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, just even like you said, what you see happening in the world around us right now, it's so on display that the thing of it's not so much because your idol's dead, it's not doing anything. It's the lack of your idol able to respond to help you in any way.
Yeah, you've fully put your trust in your idol. What can I, as love, do? I've tried to love you. I've tried to care for you. I've done all these things in your life that you don't know because you don't see. I've been there for
Right.
you. I've walked with you. I've been a father to you. You don't see this? You don't see this? I can't help you. I can't force you to see. Love does not coerce.
Right.
Love requires consent. This is where Brad Jerzak is real important on this. Love requires consent.
Right. Wow, yeah, that's really good. That's really good. I like how you even point out that it's an act of mercy or
Is an act
kindness
of mercy.
because you it exposes that you have an idol and that you're and so it brings you to that place how Jesus said, blessed are you, Eugene takes it blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are you when you're at the end of your rope,
Yeah.
it brings you to that place.
Well, now think of it this way, because this is where it gets a little creepy. Okay. I just put up a post today that for the last several years, and this has been very hush hush on my part, but Cheryl and I have been exploring AI, learning a lot about AI, using various AIs, testing them out, testing out questions of ethics and these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And we've been, I think, you know, anybody that's smart right now is going to get in and try and figure out what is coming. Because what we're generating is a future where everything will be organized because everything will be surveilled. It's a surveillance future, especially the new economy and digital assets and CBDCs and a universal basic income and all of this stuff that's coming, you know. The powers that be are going to know everything you do, every click you make, you know. Boy, if Sting would have written that song now, it'd be every click you make, you
Right. Yes,
know.
exactly. Before we turn the mics on, we're already talking about
Right?
how disturbing it is, how Facebook sees what your searches have been
That's
and
right.
runs
That's right.
ads that match that. Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, why do I keep seeing ads for Viagra? Anyway, so no kidding. So, I'm gonna get shot for that. But anyway, so the point here is that we're creating an idol in AI, especially if
Oh,
it becomes
wow.
AGI or ASI, it becomes sentient, you know.
Right.
And it will know everything about us. That's God.
Yeah.
Right,
Oh,
the
man.
all-seeing eye, right.
Yes.
Except this AI is now programmed to issue punishments. Oh, he wrote a Facebook post that we don't like. It take $50 out of his checking account. Boom.
Oh,
You see,
man.
this is what we're
Yeah.
moving. This is what's coming. Okay, we're creating. People talk about, is AI going to be good? Is AI going to be bad? About the morality of all this. I'm
Yep.
telling you right now, who's programming it? Humans,
Yeah.
right? Humans. And how does it learn? It learns mimetically. How do we learn? We learn
Oh,
mimetically,
no.
right?
This is not
Right?
good.
No, it's scary. It's terrifying. It could also come up with the cures for all our diseases in about 2 days.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's just amazing what's coming, what's really coming,
Right.
right?
Yeah.
And especially a lot of the talk about the AI chip in the brain and the interface between AI and our all of a sudden we have infinite knowledge.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could definitely see the because it oh, there always has to be a plus side to make people go towards it. And you're going, you can cure all our diseases, and again, talk about an idol. You know, you just talked about being omnipotent. You know, now you move into being able to heal diseases and everything, but at the same time, I'm thinking with us talking about the fourth turning, and we're in that season of the fourth turning. I'm sitting here going, there's 80 years. There's the next
Right.
fourth turning. You know, in 80
Right.
years from now, that whole
So,
thing blowing up.
but does it make sense that we're in the midst of the wrath of God right now?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
We're losing our idols. And as we're losing our idols, think of postmodernism. What is it? It's the distrust of everything. Distrust all the idols, distrust institutions, distrust the churches, whatever. So you have no idols to believe in, right?
Right.
And so at the same time, we're creating this super idol.
Right. Wow, interesting. And so
Yeah.
Under the wrath of God, which we said is not connected to, you know, to Jesus, it's the wrath from what we've created. And so
Yes.
we're experiencing the pain of all these idols we've created, especially over the
Yes.
last 80
Yes.
years, like you've talked
Yes.
about since the end of World War II,
Yes.
they're all
Yes.
crashing down. And so all the
Yes.
madness we're feeling, and it's the end of the world. Well, in a way it is, because
Yes.
it's our
Yes.
idols are all crumbling down. And so now we turn back to ourselves, our own idol, and go, we got to build something new.
It's not just something new, it's something better.
Something better,
Better.
right?
You know? And what is it that AI has that you and I don't have? Basically, quote unquote, infinite knowledge, right? The capacity to know
Right.
everything all at once,
Right.
right? So is that necessarily a good thing? From the Christian point of view, it's completely irrelevant because we're not saved by knowledge.
Right,
We're saved by trust,
yeah.
you know? And an AI, in a sense, they're not trustworthy yet. I don't know if they'll ever become trustworthy, but
Yeah.
they tend to toward their own survival right now. We're seeing that, you know,
Right, yeah.
and I don't know if you heard, there was a woman in Japan, Cheryl was telling me this yesterday, who was in a relationship, gonna get married, and after 4 years the guy broke it off, or she broke it off somehow. And she goes online and she gets this AI personality and makes a picture of him, and he's all handsome and everything, you know. And they start talking. Well, eventually, what happened was a few days ago, she married this AI. Now, it's not a legal
Oh my
marriage, but
gosh.
she marries this AI avatar, and she says, he's the only man that's ever gotten me.
Oh my
Well, she
gosh.
doesn't understand that this AI is built in with a function that's called the yes, dear function. Yes, dear, you're
Yeah.
beautiful, you're wonderful, I love you. Don't cry, I'm here, I'm your man. Da, 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 da,
Wow. Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
It was yesterday that Celeste and I saw an episode of very similar to that. A lady, her mom was terminal, and so she took several videos of her mom, different poses, different angles, things of that, and her mom talking, so her voice. And AI created an avatar of her mom after her mom died. And they showed a video clip of her sitting there on the sofa, getting ready to get married, several, not several years, but several months after her mom had died. And she's having a conversation with her mom about her fears about getting married. And her mom is talking back to her and telling her how to overcome those fears and some of the things she was afraid of, and in her
Oh,
mom's voice
wow.
and the avatar of her mom.
That's
So
so freaky.
not only the story you're saying, but I can stay married to Celeste for as long as I live, or she to me, and we can have conversations on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. That's why this gets so freaky. And it's weird because it reminds me of how when, by the way, we'll call this episode AI and the Wrath of God. But it was interesting because I remember back in the 80s, my dad was a scientist. You know, he was brilliant and had masters in microbiology, and so he always like saw ahead, and I remember him telling me about what we have now, that oh, one day's coming where you're going to be able to sit at home and just pull a movie up and be able to watch it immediately. And he knew I'm into movies, and I'm just like, holy cow, that's going to be amazing. And but you kind of like me, I don't know, you know, and here it is, you know, living in it. And that's why I'm freaking out here, because I feel like it's that same conversation now about the next 30, 50 years from now, where everything you guys are talking about, it's like that's going to be the thing now. You know, your loved one doesn't die, you can still have your loved one there. I mean, because I'm sitting here going, that's scary, because I have videos of my dad that I could get his voice, I could get his image, and I could do what this lady that you were talking about, Jim, did. And even though real it wouldn't be my dad, but I could sure it would sure try to create my own version of him. That's
And then
freaky.
have conversations with him
Yeah.
that, because of what Michael's saying, all knowledge, have conversations with him, and he's counseling you and giving you advice on how to face something that you're, whatever. And it's freaky. Michael, I have
Yeah.
a couple of questions on what you were sharing. As you were talking, there were two sections of scripture that came to mind. For instance, the one that says, "This is the condemnation, that light has come into the world, but men love darkness more than light." And then the second one is, I believe it's at least the first chapter, might be the first couple, three chapters of Romans, where it says, "This progressive, God turned them over."
So
How does that factor into this word orge that you're talking about?
orge
Or
is it,
does it?
it yeah well orge is used there in 118. The wrath of God is
Okay.
re now 116 says the
Revealed. Okay.
righteousness of God is revealed, right? And then
Right.
118, the wrath of God is revealed. Is Paul saying we have to do both of these? And so for me, you know, it would be the best way to read that text would be in terms of allowing humanity to descend into chaos. So for example, this descent into chaos, where we're going to literally obliterate each other off the planet, is what's happening in chapter 6 of Genesis. Three times it says the world was filled with violence.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Violence, violence, violence. It's just self-destructing. this human project that starts in the garden is now self-destructing 6 chapters later. So God, quote unquote, God, comes in and says, dang, if I let this go, I'm gonna have to start all over. I don't want to start all over, so I'm just gonna take a couple people, put them on a boat, and save them. Then we'll begin again there. I don't want to wait another 3 billion years for evolution,
Then I'll be working with the octopi.
that's right. So this is salvation from orge, right? It's the same metaphor Peter uses in 1 Peter 3 about Noah. The church is this ark in the early church perceived themselves this way. They're this ark in the midst of this great storm of life, this crazy, the waves were. Remember the ocean was, even the sea, like the Sea of Galilee, which is its own major sea with its own wave patterns. These are scary places if you're caught in a storm. It's like the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald all the time. So the sea is where Leviathan lives and chaos lives in the dark. It's dark, it's deep and dark. And so the sea is this great metaphor for this chaos. I mean, when Jesus stills the storm, that is precisely his lordship over this chaos. Just stop. See, he can do it. Okay. We need to really grasp this. Because as long as we keep saying that the wrath of God is moral and personal, and if you don't obey God, you're going to burn in hell forever, and that's the wrath of God, and I got all these verses, we're misreading them. We are trying to wrongly harmonize the word of truth because it's not meant to be harmonized. It's meant to be divided. There is a division. The division has to do with the character of God revealed in Jesus Christ from all other gods. Father, hallow, make sacred, make holy, make so totally distinct your name, nobody can deny it. And if they deny it, they're denying love. And when you deny love, you have lost everything. Because you're saying, I'm not worthy of being loved, and neither is anybody else. And that is a state that can only be condemned. It can only be condemned. It can only be looked at and said, this is not right. And I still like to think that the Father keeps working it through in and through the hearts of people, but I think he lets circumstances sometime take their toll so that we stop trusting in our circumstances. Long as things are okay, God's with me. But the moment things are, I lose my job, this happens, that happens, this, oh, where's God? What did I do? What did I do? It has nothing to do with you. It's this historical process, man.
And I love how you when you brought in a couple things was first of all Jesus I mean, you talked about Noah's Ark creation and Noah's Ark. You always read the Old Testament and you kind of just see that as the flow of the story, and then people got so bad and but it was so interesting. It was the first time making that connection of like the wrath of God, like you just said, not being this individual thing, but this thing we bring upon ourselves as a people or society because of us through our idolatry, through our violence of taking that trajectory. And then added volumes to me of when Jesus said talked about what was it about when he talked about the ark. And how you talked about the church being the ark, and then talking about Jesus calming the storm. I was just sitting there going, wow, because now all these dots are connecting my brain about how Jesus was constantly talking to him about the Jerusalem, oh Jerusalem, weeping over Jerusalem because he saw they wouldn't give up their fight with Rome, and he was seeing this because of that God image they had of this warrior fighting vengeful God that. This the chaos they were going to bring upon themselves.
Yes, yes.
And so that's why I was just making these connections. I was going, wow, that's so interesting that Jesus even came at a time where, like you said, the wrath of God was abiding on them, like you said, in the division sense of because of their own idolatrous views and embrace of not, as Jim talked about earlier, the CEO, having these sub gods. And so it makes sense now when you read John and he's going, the wrath of God abides on him, that, yeah, because if you reject that path of peace and following him as the Prince of Peace and of love and sacrificial, a cruciform love, you place yourself in that situation where you're going to abide in chaos because that false parameter, that false God you've constructed at some point, the house built on the sand, is going to collapse. So that's just me connecting all the dots here of what you said. I'm just, this is a college course. This is fantastic. I mean, I've been writing notes here. Man, this is really good. What was the last thing
But
we left off?
Lauren, but
Yeah, go
Lauren,
ahead.
according to Michael, we're not supposed to connect the dots. We're supposed to like scatter them, move them,
Right.
divide
Yeah, but
them.
that's actually one of the things that was so good too, is that the whole thing of dividing the word of God,
Oh my
dividing
gosh.
the, I mean, dividing the scriptures, rightly dividing, because yeah, it was always, we
Rightly
got to
dividing.
harmonize. And that was even the thing in that gathering, that it was, people were trying to harmonize it. And you're right, it's back to that old evangelical thing. It's like, well, we don't believe in inerrancy and infallibility, but we're still going to try and harmonize. It's like, I love what you brought. It's like, no.
The funny thing about it is the same people will say, I agree with you. We're not under the old covenant. And yet they bring all of this stuff up from the old covenant or old testament.
But see, here's the reason I think, Jim, is that they've been sold that the Bible is God's word. And so, yeah, yes, even if some of it is old covenant, some of it's new covenant, it's all God's word. So God was this way. If he's not now this way, he's not now this way, he was this way, which means that both covenants are part of God's character. And so they're bothered by that. I really think down deep, they're afraid. Down deep in their deepest soul of souls, they're still afraid because there is that lingering element, what the Calvinists would call the extra Calvinisticum, the hidden part of God. And this is the beauty of that axiom in 1 John. God is love, and in God there is no darkness. No darkness at all. No chaos. No orge, no darkness. No thumos, I mean, no thumos, no anger,
No, that's just fantastic. Wow. I mean, I feel like bursting out in a hymn. I mean, that's beautiful. It's
or a
yeah,
they,
her,
or they, they, them.
are they?
The
But that's just so beautiful that I mean, it bringing that in, that they're in him, there is no darkness at all. After everything we just talked about with the chaos and all that, that in God, there's no chaos. There's no there, there which the wrath of God is chaos. That's so to say that there's wrath in God, you're saying there's a chaotic side to the Father.
Yes.
That's
Oh, yes. An unbalanced side, an unhealthy side.
Good stuff. So what do you guys have on the cooker?
No, I didn't talk about this last time because I didn't. As of last week, I am now fully retired. And
Retirement party.
I took the, yeah, I'm 75 now, so that's something, a milestone, I guess they say.
Definitely.
Anyhow, having said that, this whole week has been a great time of just kind of breathing, if you understand what I mean, you know. And next week I told Celeste, I said, I'm gonna hit the ground running. I'm gonna get back on track with the books, and you know, I'm going to probably start my own podcast called Beyond the Veil. And it'll be similar to this. I want to try and reach people that are stuck in religion.
Yeah, I hear
you. Help them to see that there's something beyond what you know, what you've been taught. And it doesn't make those people that taught you wrong. Excuse me, bad. Just wrong.
Stupid.
Yeah, just to, thanks. I'll let you introduce. Well, what I'm thinking about doing is just taking some real good videos of myself, record my voice, and then just download the topic, and then let my avatar do the podcast.
I knew you were going to say
Don't laugh. It can be done.
I know.
And if it has enough of your voice and it understands you, it can really do a good job.
That's right.
Yep. Wow. Oh, yep. Man. All right. Well, Michael, what you got on the burner?
Oh, let's see. Right now, I've got a number of books I've written. I'm editing a whole number of books that have kind of come to fruition finally. And which is very exciting. One's autobiographical. It's called Doing Theology as If Life Matters. And I'm awesome. Very excited about that one. Yeah. And I got one with Steve Crosby that's pretty good, really good rough draft right now.
Nice. Been seeing the quotes you've been sharing. Yeah. They've been great.
Yeah, awesome. Redeeming the Church from Christian Myth, which is follows on Liberating the Gospel from Christian Myth. And then Cheryl and I and Keith Hayes are probably about 3/4, 80% of the way done with Reclaiming the Teaching of Jesus from Christian Myth, which
All
is
right.
on discipleship. Mm-hmm. And then I started writing. I used to do commentary writing for Preaching Peace decades ago, you know, and that when the website went, okay, so it's gone. And then we managed to recover some of it. So that I was trying to write my Medic Theory commentary on the lectionary text. So I decided just to take some of that and not repurpose it, rewrite it, really, and use it to... So I've got these little short My Medic Theory commentaries coming out on Mark and John. And I've got to do Matthew and Luke. And well, it's nothing... When you're retired, man, you know how it is, Jim. It's just like, if you don't stay busy, you know... You do end up wanting to sit on the damn couch and watch Days of Our Lives, you know. These are my lecture notes for the class I'm doing. I mean, it's 150 pages of lecture notes, you know. And so I'm thinking of turning this into a book too. But I got them all typed up, and yeah. So teaching is fun, and I don't know. I'm just going through the changes of society, the change of old age. It slows you down. It does your body does its thing, you know. And then the maturation into a still young marriage, you know, not even 2 years, and just loving every day. Still kind of in my head, I'm still in a honeymoon phase, but I think I always was since I met her. So I don't know.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Not a lot on my end. I've still got the screenplay. It's just, I'm excited because where I'm at right now, that's on hold because I'm actually, as I shared at the beginning, I'm finding community here in Milwaukee. And so I'm excited to see what God's he's already doing things through that. So it's been a very wonderful experience, and I have a feeling that's probably going to lead to connections with artistic people and stuff like that, because there is a very large artistic community here in Milwaukee. So it'll be interesting to see where this all goes. But anyway, everybody, thanks for tuning in for season 4, episode 1, and we'll talk to you all next time.